Welcome to the Edu All-Stars Podcast.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to our 40th episode of Edu All-Stars. Before we get started, I want to thank everyone for the great response that we've had online and watching the show and people who are leaving us reviews on iTunes. And we want to encourage you as you watch tonight's show to just tweet using the hashtag EduAllStars, and you can catch all of our previous shows on eduallstars.com/podcasts. Or on iTunes. My name is Todd Nesloni. You can find me on Twitter at TechNinjaTodd. My co-hosts are...
My name is Chris Kessler. You can find me on Twitter at IamKessler.
My name is Keegan Wade. You can find me on Twitter at NickGeek14.
Chris?
Oh, sorry. I didn't know it was me now. Yeah, so we're going to talk about our sponsor. So this episode of Edu All-Stars is sponsored by our friends at TechSmith. And TechSmith provides products in over 180 countries around the world with screen capture and recording software for individual and professional use. With products like Snagit, Coach's Eye, Camtasia, TechSmith Relay, and Moray, they're making a new commitment to help you collaborate and share across your different devices and make sure you can be productive wherever you are. I've been using Camtasia all week long to post videos, screen captures to my blog, and I just love it. It's super intuitive. I think the product's awesome.
And as you listen to this week's episode, we encourage you to tweet using the hashtag EduAllStars because we'll be selecting two Twitter users to win a Camtasia or a Snagit license, and those winners will be contacted by Todd after the show.
And we want to welcome this week's guest. We are very excited to have AJ Giuliani on with us. He currently works as a K-12 technology staff developer overseeing a one-to-one initiative. He's a firm believer in 20% time and genius hour, and he's also the founder and chief editor of Education Is My Life, along with probably about 20 other things I could list for him. But thanks for coming on tonight with us, AJ.
Hey, I'm really excited to be here. Love the show. Love Edu All-Stars. Love what you guys are doing. I've listened to probably 30 out of your 40 episodes. I'm not going to lie. I haven't listened to all 40, but I'm getting there, right? 75%. I'm proficient.
That's good. Hey. You get a 75. That's a C, right?
Right? Yeah. about the type of high school student I was.
That's right.
Oh, gosh. Well, hey, at least you've watched one. That's good. But, AJ, I guess we can go ahead and start. Tell us a little bit about your background and how you ended up in education.
You want, like, the long story?
We want the good version, yeah.
All right. So I think, you know, my educational journey really started, you could talk about where I grew up, which is a small town called Jenkintown. I'm from Pennsylvania, right outside of Philadelphia, and my high school, my graduating class had 32 students in it. So you may be thinking rural town, but it's kind of suburban, right? And really small high school. I got to do a lot at that high school, right? So I was playing two sports. I was in the musical. I was the Cowardly Lion one year. And I got to be student council president, just got to do a lot of different stuff, you know, sing. I was in a band. And so in terms of, like, having a ton of interest and not having to focus on one thing, like I see so many of the students that I work with, it really allowed me to, I think, be interested in a lot of different things, and especially reading and writing. I wasn't that good of a student, but I really enjoyed learning, you know, all different types of stuff. And I was always working on something, you know, along those lines. Took a computer programming class, like all that kind of stuff. And from there, I was thinking about playing sports in college and ended up at Westchester University. And it's a really good teacher school in Pennsylvania. And I didn't know. Like, I changed my major probably 5 or 6 times when I was in college, right? I was like, should I be an accountant? Then I failed my first accounting course, you know. And then, and I was like, you know, what should I do? And I finally realized probably about halfway into college that what I really enjoyed doing was working with youth, right, coaching, different things like that. And I loved reading and writing, writing for my own, you know, reading books for my own and kind of that deeper level thinking. So I thought, you know, why not give education a try? And I really enjoyed the coursework when I did that. About the same time while I was in college is when I went on my first of two trips over to Africa, South Africa and then Swaziland. And both of those places, I was with a team that was helping work at an AIDS orphanage and a medical clinic and a church. And we ran these really big kids camps in South Africa and then did the same thing in Swaziland. And that was where I was like, you know what, I got to work with, you know, students. I have to work with them because it just made me feel alive, right? That was kind of like kind of an eye-opener for me. And also, education allowed me to kind of really do something different every day, you know, and allowed me to be flexible and have a lot of different avenues, you know, just to reach other people and make a difference. And I think I've always, you know, had that kind of make a difference type thing, just being the way I was brought up by my parents. And so after my wife and I got back from Africa the second time, I was just kind of full gung-ho into education. I didn't know if I wanted to go to Africa and start a school or what it was. And then as soon as I came out of college, I got a job right away as a middle school teacher and was lucky enough to land in a school district that was doing the Classroom Future Grant, where they got about $1 million worth, right, and different MacBooks. So I got my hands as a first and second year teacher on a class set of 30 MacBooks and really got into technology. Never took any courses on it. Never got my master's in it. I actually got my master's in global and international education. And when I found on the internet that there were so many other teachers doing similar stuff that I was doing, that's when my eyes kind of really opened up to this whole kind of global collaboration phenomenon. Doing the flat classroom project with Vicki Davis and Julie Lindsay, and just really kind of starting to get my feet wet on Twitter and blogging and different things like that. And so I think my educational journey started in kind of a small school where I was able to do a lot of things and now ended up in a big, vast ocean of educational opportunities where I'm still doing a lot of things.
Yeah, it's amazing. So you're not in the classroom anymore. When did you decide to that it, you know, you were ready to leave the classroom and move on to something different?
Well, so I did write a blog post one time called I Left the Classroom But Not the Students, because I really feel that way. I still get to work with students a lot in my role, but 2 years ago, we were moving to a real one-to-one structure. So everybody in our school, grades 6 through 12, is getting a laptop. Students take a take-home that they're using, not BYOD, like strict one-to-one laptop. And my boss needed staff developers, right? Needed people to work with teachers to kind of make this transition happen, because a lot of teachers had been doing this themselves, right? A couple teachers had carts and different things like that, and that's what you see in a lot of different schools. The teachers that are really into technology may have written grants for it or different types of things, but we were going full one-to-one. And so he approached me, and I talked to him about this kind of role as a K-12 staff developer. And there's another woman, Diane Krause, working in my school district, who's awesome. And she was doing the same thing. So the both of us kind of teamed up, and I got out of the classroom. And I really enjoy my role right now, working with teachers and also getting to work with students.
That's awesome. You also do a lot with the 20% time and the Genius Hour movement. Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
Yeah, so I guess, I don't know if it was 2-3 years ago, but my last year teaching in the classroom, I kind of stumbled on a couple different things, right? So Daniel Pink's book Drive was a big motivator for me. I had read some blog posts online and some different things, and I was teaching 11th grade honors English students. And if you know anything about 11th grade honors English students, they care about usually one thing, and that's the grade, right? So they were ready to go to college, right, and they just – they're like, Mr. J, you got to, you know, they're kind of like constantly getting at me for the grades. And I was like, there's got to be something more to this, right? There's got to be a different way to reach these students so it's not all about the grade. And so doing research and kind of reading some stuff online, came across the idea of 20% time. And you'll see, normally when I get an idea, I just run with it. And so over Christmas break, the holiday break, we kind of, you know, got this idea of 20% time and boom, introduced it to my class, and kind of, like I say, the rest was history, because they took it from an idea to an actual reality and also something I could write about and share and be really proud about as a teacher and also a learner beside them. So 20% time for me is kind of the start of where I kind of said, you know what, I actually have a message that I want to spread in education, right? It's not just about technology. It's not just about, you know, instructional practice. It's about letting students have a chance to learn what they want and letting them reengage with their passions and their interests in an actual school setting, not just on their own time.
Okay. I'm probably the only one who doesn't know, but can you, what is 20% time exactly?
All right, Keegan, here's the deal. If I was your teacher and I gave you a 20% time assignment, here's what I would say. Keegan, for the rest of the year, 20% time of the time you spend in my class, you get to learn whatever you want. And not only do you get to learn whatever you want, but you get to make whatever you want, create whatever you want. All I'm going to ask of you is that you document that learning process, and at the end of it, you share what you made or created with the rest of your students, I mean, and the rest of your peers. And that's kind of the basic premise to it. So there's a lot of different variations of what you can do, but that's the basic premise. You get to learn what you want and get to share it with your class members.
Okay, thank you. That sounds awesome.
Yeah.
I knew Keegan would find that very interesting, considering he's still in high school, and I can just see the wheels turning about what he wishes was happening right now.
Yeah, exactly. I want that.
Yeah, and I think that's what most of my students, I kind of had three sets of students, right? So the first set of students were like, that's awesome. Let's, you know, I want to work on this right away. And then I had another set of students that were like, what are you talking about? Like, give me like a handout or something, Mr. J. Like, come on. And then I had a third set of students that were like, hold on a second. Is this some type of trick? Right? Are you messing with me right now? And it really was cool seeing them go through the process of actually having to choose something for themselves to work on.
What would you say is probably one of the coolest things that you saw one of your students choose?
That's good.
I would say... three things I'm going to say. I'm not going to say one. So one, a student in our school chose to learn sign language so they could sing a song to their niece who was deaf.
And that's awesome.
That was like, she was like, you know, I play two sports and I work and I don't have any time to learn it. And we're like, it's perfect, you know. And then she performed that song to, you know, her classmates and a lot of people in the school. And it was pretty, you know, it's a pretty touching moment. Then there was another student who wasn't actually one of my students, but since I did 20% time, it's kind of spread to our entire school doing it. And there was one student that wanted to clone a carnivorous plant, and he kind of did so successfully, and it was really crazy. And he did everything just in his kitchen, and this kid's like a mad scientist, but he cloned it. And then the third person created this Facebook page called Wiss Compliments. So the school I work at is called Wissahickon. And instead of doing like a big anti-bullying thing, she decided, let's make a Facebook page called Wiss Compliments where we could anonymously share compliments about different people in our class for all different types of things.
Oh, I love that idea.
And so those three things were pretty awesome.
Just hearing those, I mean, when you go to share those with other teachers, I mean, just imagining having a whole student population that's doing ideas like that, it just seems full of creativity, and why wouldn't you take advantage of that?
Yeah, I think a lot of times, you know, there's pushback from curriculum perspectives and a lot of different perspectives, but we've kind of worked our way around that. We actually wrote Genius Hour into our ninth grade curriculum, so we're set to go at Wissahickon.
I love that.
That's awesome. And I'll put some links to some Genius Hour websites that you can, if you're interested in doing that in your own classroom, I'll put some links in the show notes that you can check out later on.
Yeah.
Well, AJ, I know you also co-founded the Education is My Life. For our listeners who may not be familiar with it, what's the purpose behind that?
I think, you know, for Education My Life, I was at a time where I really was, looking at a lot of different blogs online, and I was seeing all these different perspectives on the same thing, right? So this person would write about, you know, using this type of technology, or this person would write about Common Core or whatever it was, and was just all over the place, right? So I was seeing a teacher perspective, an elementary teacher perspective, an administrator perspective. And the idea behind Education My Life is taking all these people who really had a focus on education and bringing their perspectives together on one topic. And so that's where it came from. And, you know, since then we've had some really great writers write for us. We've put some ebooks out there, and it really led to the launch of our digital magazine, you know, that came out in January. So it's really all about kind of just sharing kind of, you know, what works in education from a lot of different perspectives in education, including students who we had write for us as well.
Yeah, you kind of mentioned the digital magazine, The Best and Next in Education, that kind of that reaches over 120,000 teachers. How'd that come about? What is it? What's it look like? How do people get involved in that?
Yeah, so again, I think it goes back to that same idea that I had, that there's a lot of teachers out there, that aren't getting what we're getting, the people that are on Twitter and are listening to educational podcasts and are reading blogs, right? And so I had that problem, I guess not necessarily a problem, but I had that issue in my own school where there's just a ton of teachers that for one reason or another didn't have time to connect, didn't want to connect, or didn't feel that it was worth their value, right? And so I'm like, well, we can complain about that as educators, right? We can say, oh, you know, that stinks that they're not going to, you know, get on and read blogs and get on Twitter, you know, they're not that into it. Or we can just push the best content out to them and give them an easy-to-read format that's going to take 15 minutes every 2 weeks, and they can be caught up to date on kind of the best and next in education. And so that's where it came from. I wrote a blog post called Is It the Time to Push Out the Best Educational Content? And kind of validated the idea. And we just published our sixth issue. And the way we do it is a little bit different from other magazines. Our whole purpose is we want lead learners in each school to sign up for it and then them send it out to teachers in their district. So instead of me, who no one knows in Todd's district, right, or Todd's school, sending them a magazine, Todd would sign up for it, get the magazine to his inbox, and then he would share it with all his teachers.
And it's funny because that's exactly how we do it on my campus.
And I think it's a better way to do it, right? I think, you know, maybe it's a little bit skewed in terms of, you know, maybe some of the reach that we have, but every single person that signed up said they want to share it with their colleagues, and we're seeing that on the back end. They're getting the issue and sharing it out with their colleagues.
Yeah, I think it's an absolutely amazing idea, and that's true. These people aren't coming out to Twitter and professional developments on the weekends. They, you know, they have lives and have got their own things going on too, and just having something in their inbox is so easy. Where can they sign up for that, or where could lead learners sign up for that if they want to get more information about it?
Yeah, so you can go to bestandnext.org. So you spell it all out, bestandnext.org. And it's really easy to sign up on there. There's probably some sign-up links on my website too, ajjuliani.com, but bestandnext.org. Go ahead. You can see all the previous six issues and sign up to get the new ones delivered right to your inbox.
Awesome.
All right. You also recently wrote a post about the gamification of PD. Can you tell us a little bit more about that and kind of specify what it is?
So this is all kind of fresh in my mind, and Chris actually left a great comment on that post. I would say last year was my first time working as this kind of staff developer role, and it's kind of weird, right? So you're supposed to go in and help other teachers teach better, right, or improve their teaching or try something new or whatever it is. And so it took me a little bit of time to really kind of find my footing on what I was really supposed to be doing. And what it came down to was I really was supposed to be building capacity, right? It wasn't supposed to be me, AJ, helping these teachers improve or learn how to use technology. It was really us as a school improving together, right? But it was really hard to reach 700 teachers because that's how many people are in my district. And so what we ended up doing with the woman I work with, Diane Krause, is we started thinking, you know, there's got to be a way where we can flip these PD sessions and we can actually set it up so people can kind of learn these basic things that we're talking about on their own. And then when they want to get to that next level, higher level type work, that innovative type work that we want to do and that we kind of have the time to work with them on it one-to-one, then they'd have ability to do that. So we had this rolling around in our head for a while, like probably ideas you guys have rolling around in your head for a while too, right? Mm-hmm. And then about 3 weeks ago, a month ago, we went to a professional development session at our local IU, and a guy, Philip, he gave us a presentation on gamification. He works at a local school district. He's a Google certified teacher. The guy is awesome, right? And he gave this whole presentation on gamification, made us like roll dice at our tables and play, you know, Angry Birds, Star Wars. It was crazy. but it was also a lot of fun, and I learned a lot. So I'm sitting there, and I'm like looking over at Diane, who's there with me, and I'm like, we got to do something. You know, my mind is spinning. I'm like, we got to do something. And so in the 3 weeks since then, what we've basically done is taken 80% of what we normally do when we work with teachers one-on-one, and broken that down into different pathways where teachers can take it by themselves. They can create performance tasks where it shows that they understand what they're talking about and send it to us, and then in turn we send them a badge. And so we also have a leaderboard for our entire school based on who's completed which pathways or missions, as we're calling them. And it's just really the start. And I kind of put that post up there to get feedback and kind of, you know, some ideas from the community of how to move forward.
I love it. What kind of reaction are you getting from the teachers?
So we soft launched it, right? I wanted one of the last steps, so step seven of the seven steps that I said what we're doing is launch it the right way. And we soft launched it to a number of teachers and to kind of get their feedback, and we got some really good feedback. And the next step is really kind of getting administration on board, and so we're meeting with them this week because we want to present at a faculty meeting. And we want to give people this, again, kind of goes back to the 20% time. We're not forcing anybody to do this. We're not saying, hey, you need to earn a badge per marking period, right? Or you need to earn this many. No, this is just, here's a resource available for you. And it really can kind of help you out in terms of understanding these tools and concepts and different things like that. So next step is administration and getting them on board, because right now, Todd, think about this, right? I'm a K-12 technology staff developer. I know in my district who can use the tools really well and who is innovating in the classroom. But sometimes administrators don't know that, and right. Sometimes their peers don't know that. This leaderboard allows you to be like, oh, I teach social studies too. I need to go talk to Larry and find out what he's doing with Microsoft OneNote, because it looks like he's got a couple different badges in that, and I can talk to him as a resource. So, again, it's that whole idea behind building capacity instead of just Diane and myself being the ones that provide the training.
I am very excited to see how this is going to turn out and the kind of feedback, because moving into an administrative role next year, as soon as I read that post, I was like, oh man, this is so cool. It's such a fun way to do this where it's not threatening. It's not, you have to do this, but it provides it a fun avenue to recognize people for the professional development that they're doing on their own time.
What happens, just to play devil's advocate here, what happens if you see 25% of the staff, you know, start getting badges and then the other 75% not giving two licks about it and not doing anything?
So I think that part of the, I think some of that's going to happen, right? Mm-hmm. So it's not required, right? So that those same people that don't kind of go online and do those own professional development things might not do these badges either, right? Mm-hmm. I think when we talked about that exact same thing happening, my response was that's fine, okay? Because those 25% of people that do it have now kind of got the capacity to work with those other 75%, right? So now I have a 25% of a crew that I can count on to actually work and kind of spread the message of saying, because teachers listen to teachers, let's face it, right? True. They listen to their peers. So if you want to reach a teacher that's hard to reach, reach their best friend. That's what I always say, you know, reach the person that's next to them. So I think it may start out slow. But I want to give this summer as a time for them to kind of dabble and look at some different things and get feedback so that we can really launch next September full force and really kind of, you know, make it a push. So when someone emails me for help, or I can kind of look and see on their pre-survey what they did and say, hey, why don't you really try this out? I can come and do it with you, right? So that could be my role sometimes, coming and doing with a person. And other times it could be, you know, why don't you do that at your department meeting instead of just talking, actually start doing something, you know, those different types of things. So I think there's a lot of different avenues for growth, but I do think that we might have some of that 25-75% at the start.
Well, the good thing about you is I know your blog about it, so I know we can keep up with
it. That's true.
How it's going.
I will.
Well, I know we mentioned at the beginning of the show that you oversee a one-to-one initiative. Is that district-wide?
Yeah, so it's 6 through 12, and I think we did it a smart way. We started 6th and 9th grade, and then this year it's 6th and 7th, 9th and 10th, and then next year 6th, 7th, 8th, so the entire middle school, 9th, 10th, 11th, 12th, right? So those students that started with it in 6th grade years ago, they're going to be in eighth grade and have had it for, you know, 3 years. And also financially, it's a good way to do it too, instead of just 6 through 12, everybody gets laptops at once. And also, from a professional development standpoint, think of how that's a good way to do it, because now Diane and myself, we can work really focused on one grade level each and then kind of expand each year. So I have to give my credit to my technology director, John McGowan. I think he's a really smart guy, and this isn't his first time around the block doing these type of things. And so we've had some really positive feedback, and students doing some cool things.
So, I mean, there's a lot of districts that are moving one-to-one. What would you say has been the most difficult aspect of implementing that, or the biggest lesson you've learned?
Maybe two lessons. I think the biggest lesson is everybody's not on the same learning continuum, right? So you're going to have teachers that are all over the place. And if you're trying as an administrator or as a school board or wherever it is to get all the teachers on the exact same page, you're going to fail, right? It's just not going to happen. So I think the sooner stakeholders can realize that, the easier they can see those little wins that happen, right? Because if you get a teacher that hasn't really used a computer ever before, which, by the way, there's a lot of teachers out there that haven't used a computer,
sure,
right? And the ones that we provide them, they could use as a lunch tray sometimes. But if you get a teacher that's doing that, to create a Google form and give their kids an online quiz, that's amazing, right? So that's a huge win. Whereas some of my teachers, if they're doing that, that's their everyday practice, right? That's just what they do. And for them, that's not maybe innovative. So I think innovation is on this kind of continuum. And I think a lot of times, even the stuff that I read online, we kind of say, well, this is innovative, or this is innovative, or this is, you know, what we should do with technology. And it's more or less like, well, we kind of have to differentiate with teachers too, folks, right? We can't say one size fits all, doesn't work with students, and then put it on teachers, because it just doesn't work that way. So I think that's the biggest issue, understanding that professional development challenge. And then the second issue is realizing that students like Keegan may break their computer. Right? And and having a way to deal with that, like a system to deal with that, is really important. And so if you don't pilot ahead of time and then have six grades doing it all at once, those issues get magnified. But if you only have one grade level doing it, then you can kind of figure out a system of how that works and how to deal with those issues like theft, damage, and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, cool. Yeah. So this is the point where I normally would ask about being a connected educator, but I'm going to go ahead and answer that question for you. It's change your life, you're the better for it, da, 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 da. Okay, yeah. So we're going to move on to something different. You are one of the blogs that I follow. I don't follow very many blogs like religiously, but I definitely am interested every time I see your name come up in a tweet that you wrote a blog post. I'm always clicking it to read. And you just write really great blog posts. I really appreciate that. But
thank you.
Just kind of from the back end perspective of it, like how in heck are you getting these great blog posts out as often as you do? Are you scheduling these things, or you just build it into your workflow, or how do you get these blog posts out as often as you do?
So I write 1,000 words a day.
Okay.
It's something I started. I'd probably say I have a little app that is called Commit, but I think it's 530 days ago. I started writing 1,000 words a day. And, you know, I follow this guy online named James Clear.
Hold on. For just a second, I saw Todd's eyes, like, kind of light up like he was challenged for a second. So I have a feeling that Todd's going to start writing here.
No. AJ, well, you can have that one.
Yeah, I think, so for me, it came down to I was reading the work of this guy, James Clear, who's awesome. He writes about habits, jamesclear.com, if you want to check him out. And he said this thing. He said, winners have systems, losers have goals. And he wrote a whole blog post about it, and I was like, whoa, that kind of makes a lot of sense. Where he went through these different kind of – he went through these different, you know, kind of instances where, like, guess what? Everybody has goals. He's like, everybody who's ever been a human being has goals, right? And you have goals when you're 5, and you have goals when you're 15, and you have goals when you're 50. It doesn't change, right? The successful people normally have systems that help them reach their goals. And so for me, and wanting to become a published author and wanting to write more, my goal was to start out and just try to write 250 words a day. And I did that for about a month before I was like, I can crush this. And at that point in time, I was like, I want to go to 1,000 words a day. And I did that also in part because another guy, Nathan Barry, did that, and he's been pushing out content left and right. And so these are just some guys online that I follow that aren't educators, which, again, I think is a big point, too. I think a lot of times educators only read educational blogs, and you got to spread yourself out. You got to read some other things to get other perspectives going on in your head. But for me, the 1,000 words was a way I could challenge myself with a system. Now, do I do it every single day? No. But if I say I write 500 words one day, I'm going to write 1,500 the next day. And so I'm an early riser, and I try to do it the first thing when I get up. And once you kind of get in the habit, it's not too bad. So I think a lot of my blog posts come from that writing stage. I probably have so much writing that is not used. And it's just reflection pieces, but I've been challenging myself to write more blog posts that are actually teaching and helping instead of just reflection, which has been hard as well. Because I think, the blog posts that I love are when somebody tells me a story that I really get into, or when I'm taught something, I'm like, I want to use that right now, or it inspires me to do something. So for me, that's kind of right now where I'm at my blogging stage. I could completely do a 180, but I try to post twice a week, and writing 1,000 words a day makes it easy to do that, or easier than what I was doing before, which was just all over the place.
Do you have anyone that you blog with that maybe you guys hold each other accountable, or is it just kind of you hold yourself accountable, or your wife is like beating you with a stick if you're not doing it?
So I would say that my wife is someone who fully supports me, and like just writing. She knows the stuff that makes me happy, and she knows writing and coaching are probably two of the things that make me happy, so she always loves when I'm doing those things, right? But I would say in terms of holding accountable, I have the app Commit. It's an app on iOS, and that really holds me accountable because it'll ping me a couple times a day and ask me if I wrote my words and kind of just get at me. And then also I just recently started kind of a mastermind group for the first time, and if you're not part of a mastermind group, basically what it is like 3 or 4 people that meet regularly, so once a month, once a week, and just hold each other accountable for different things that they're doing, and so that's helped as well.
Yeah, we've had this conversation before, but it sounds like we listen to a lot of the same podcasts and entrepreneur podcasts and stuff outside of the education realm, and I know that we kind of share the same interests. So
yeah.
It's interesting to hear you talk about the mastermind. I'm like, my ears perk up,
I think, Chris, you've said this before too, but like listen to guys like Pat Flynn, who I know you listen to, and some of these other guys. Education, part of it is just finding better ways to reach our students. And a lot of times we need to look outside of the educational box to find some of these ideas, and I think some of those people who you're talking about have really great strategies for reaching an audience, which can be applied to education, so it's pretty cool.
Yeah, agreed.
That's cool. Is there a book or a blog that you're currently reading and you would recommend? Maybe one of each?
So I did say jamesclear.com, recommend him as well. He writes about building habits and building systems, and it's almost like every single post that he writes, I'm like, I should be doing that type of thing. Book that I'm currently reading, I'm trying to think what I just read Where Good Ideas Come From by Stephen Johnson, which was awesome, and trying to think of what other ones I've recently read. I can look on my phone. But that was the recent one I just read when I was away, was Where Good Ideas Come From. And that was a really I'd like looked at it and browsed it before, but it really kind of impacted me in terms of how to think innovatively in terms of a process. So that's a really good book, Where Good Ideas Come From.
Cool. If you could go back like 5 to 10 years and give yourself a piece of advice, what would you say?
I guess it would be different 5 to 10 years, right? Mm-hmm. So yeah. 5 years ago, my daughter just turned 5, and I would tell my 5 years ago self, spend even more time with your kids. than you can, right? Because she's five, and I'm like, where did the time go already, right? She's going to kindergarten, and now the school has her for 8 hours a day, right? So I would say that would be my piece of advice. Spend as much possible time as I could with her, even though I feel like I do spend a lot of time. And 10 years ago, I would have told myself to stop planning for big things and just focus on doing something important every day, you know, because I think that's where real change happens. Because a lot of times I'm the type of person, I'm a big thinker, so I can get caught up in, like, thinking about some big idea or, you know, something, you know, ahead of time. And when I just actually get down to the work, that's when I, you know, I find that I'm most enjoying the process.
Yeah. So.
Well, you know, one of the things that we always like to end on when doing an interview with any of our guests is just finding out, what are you passionate about right now?
All right. That's a tough question to ask me, Todd, because it could be a lot of stuff.
It could be a lot of stuff. I knew this was going to be the one stumper.
Yeah. I would say most of the stuff that I'm doing right now is probably on two different levels. I think one is I got a book coming out this June, Inquiry and Innovation in the Classroom. And it's all about 20% time and genius hour and giving students the ability to kind of learn what they want in class. So I'm really passionate about that. And I'm really passionate about it because not only because I've seen it work, but because I've seen how many schools aren't doing it, right? And just kind of taking away, you know, like from somebody like Keegan, like, look, my man's on a podcast at, you know, 8 o'clock, 9 o'clock at night. That's awesome, right? So what other avenues are there for students to do stuff like that, that kind of, you know, just improve their overall just whatever moving forward? But a lot of times they're stuck just doing, like, this isn't his homework. Maybe he's getting extra credit. I don't know. You know?
No.
But I'm just saying, like, that's, it's so cool that you're doing something that you're interested in and that you care about. And, you know, kudos for that, because a lot of times maybe students don't care about that because they feel they can't because they're so overwhelmed. So that's one area. And the other area is I just want to reach more teachers, man. I think there's a lot of opportunity to reach more teachers. I would say the percent of teachers that are online connecting is too small. So I've been thinking about all kinds of stuff. Like, what if there was a website called eggconference.tv where it took the best from educational conferences and put it online, and teachers, you know, school districts could buy a package so teachers could watch those, you know, things online, or, you know, just different ideas like that of kind of reaching teachers and showing them what's going on out there.
Exactly. I got to follow up on that, because your brain seems like it works like my brain, or you just can't turn it off, like, ever.
No. Yeah, I can't.
like 2 in the morning, it's like, oh, crap, the best idea ever, and, you know.
Yeah.
How do you, like, turn it off, some of that stuff, and filter out the bad stuff and focus on the good stuff? I mean, that it's a problem.
It's a big problem. It is a big problem. I know. For me, like, as soon as I have an idea or something, and I've had so many bad ideas, right? But as soon as I have an idea, I try to write down and get down some of the concepts. So, for example, yesterday I was thinking of this idea for an app that was not about grading, right? So think like Remind 101, but it gave weekly updates to parents and students about their performance in class, but nothing to do with grades, right? So think whole child performance, right? So how are they doing emotionally, physically, psychologically, all those different types of things. And it was just a quick little simple checklist. And if, you know, if Keegan has five teachers and five of them were like, you know what, he seemed really distracted this week, boom, as a parent or as a student, I'm like, what's going on, right? Mm-hmm. I think there's not enough of that going on in education. It's all just about the grades. Keegan's got an A in class, but my man is distracted in the back of the room. I don't know what happened to distract him, but it's something that we need to work on. There's huge emotional issues in our schools. So I had this idea. I'm like, I got to write down some stuff. So I kind of just jot down, and as soon as I did that process of jotting it down, I could, like, relax, like, stop thinking about it, because I knew that it was there and I wasn't going to forget about it if it had some validity moving forward. So I think for me, it's just trying to get it down on pen and paper or online, you know, somewhere as quick as possible.
So when you start your company, let me know. I'll send my resume over to you.
I think there's a lot of educational companies that are disrupting education, but there's too many companies that are just trying to improve little aspects and not really looking big picture at what needs to change, because a lot of times those big picture changes can be really risky. And so I think it's those companies that take risks that are going to be really successful.
Yeah. Well, let me just warn you now, AJ, as being a fellow member of the Short Man Club, yeah. Chris is like 6'8", and so if you hire him, he'll be looking down on you.
I'm 6'5", I'm not that tall.
That's all right, he can play basketball with me, and I can just get easy points in the paint. I'll take
that's
a assist.
That's right, that's right. Dump it down, like Kareem down there.
That's awesome.
All right, well, thank you for everything, AJ. We'd love to have you on.
Yeah, thanks, guys. It was awesome.
Yeah, it's so cool to meet you finally. I know we've talked a lot online, and very cool to meet you.
Well, this is my first time to see you since ISTE, so it's great finally seeing you again, AJ.
I know. You know, been busy. I said I'm coaching right now, so, again, my focus a lot of times is I'm finally getting to interact with students again, and on the playing field coaching, it's just a whole nother level. So I'm really like excited for educational because I see like a lot of education moving towards that coaching aspect too, which is just I think awesome. I think what you guys are doing here with Edu All Stars is kind of allowing other educators to see what works in education and what some different people are doing. So you're kind of just spreading the love. I love what you guys are doing.
Cool. Great, Dan. Thank you. Remember, if you're listening to the show or watching it, you can connect with us on Twitter at EduAllStarsHQ using the hashtag EduAllStars. Remember, if you use the hashtag EduAllStars, we will be picking two winners to win a Camtasia or a Snagit license. And if you won, you'll be contacted shortly, so remember to use that. You can check out the website, www.eduallstars.com/podcast. And on iTunes, you can search out Edu All Stars with no spaces.
Make sure you join us next Wednesday. We're moving the day that we do this. So Wednesday, April 9th, we have the Stu Voice hashtag founder, Zach Malamed. So we are excited to have him on here to talk about giving students more of a voice and how he and some of his fellow compadres are working together to get that movement out there. And that'll be at 7 p.m. Central Standard Time. And then Monday, April 14th, we interviewed the Canadian queen herself, Victoria Olson, at 8 p.m. Central Standard Time. So you'll want to make sure you check out our conversation with Victoria.
And then lastly, we just want to really thank TechSmith for sponsoring the podcast for the next few weeks. They make fantastic products. We really encourage you to support them. TechSmith.com. All right, take care, guys.
Yeah, thanks, guys. Thank you.